Don't be a registered organ donor is my recommendation. I think it's unsafe and unwise to be a registered organ donor right now.
Welcome to Straight Talk on Life Issues. It's always good to have you with us. I'm Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Victor Nieves. Welcome back to an important part two on organ donation.
Yeah, Victor, this is an amazing two-part series that you don't want to miss. Last week, we talked about what happens behind operating room doors. Is organ donation today ethical, or are lines being crossed?
And Brad, many are being blindsided by the definition or diagnosis of so-called brain death, and there are specific protocols that must be made.
Yes, fortunately, this week, we'll dive deeper into normothermic regional perfusion, that's a mouthful. And can the process be done in an ethical way?
Let's jump back in with our guest, Dr. Heidi Klesig. She attended medical school at UW-Madison, where she completed a residency program in anesthesiology. She was a founding partner of the Pain Clinic of Northwestern Wisconsin and an instructor for the International Spinal Injection Society. She now writes and speaks on the ethics of organ donation and transplantation.
Welcome back to the show, Dr. Klesig.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
Dr. Klesig, what is NRP?
There's a variation of the donation after circulatory death protocol called normothermic regional perfusion, or NRP. And this is very controversial, even among doctors and hospitals, though it is going on currently as we speak in the United States. So in this case, the goal is to preserve a functional heart for donation. So what they do is they declare you dead according to the circulatory standard first. They do the 2 to 5 minute wait, but they want that heart to be in good shape. So they want to sort of resuscitate it. But if they resuscitate all of your organs, including your brain, you might wake up. So what they start surgery with is by clamping off the circulation to the brain to make you brain dead on purpose. And then they hook you up to ECMO or to a bypass machine, and they do a full resuscitation on the organs such that your heart starts beating again in your own chest. Now, how dead are you if your heart is beating again in your own chest? The legal standard, of course, is that you are supposed to be declared dead because you had the irreversible cessation of circulatory and respiratory functions. The fact that now your heart is beating again shows that it really wasn't that irreversible, was it? But now the doctors are legally covered because now you're brain dead. They've now declared you dead according to the neurologic standard because they've done that on purpose. Now, even the American College of Physicians, the world's largest specialty medical organization, called for a pause in NRP in 2021. They said that the burden of proof regarding the ethical and legal propriety of this practice has not been met. But I'm here to tell you, it continues. It's been since 2021, and no pause has been initiated. I mean, this is going on all around the United States and around the world, though, of course, it is banned in those countries that don't allow DCD. Additionally, Australia has disallowed NRP because it, again, ethically and legal improprieties are going on here.
Is there any way for family members or the patient to be assured that this isn't happening?
Don't be a registered organ donor is my recommendation. I think it's unsafe and unwise to be a registered organ donor right now. Now, again, I would wholeheartedly recommend if you have a family member that needs a kidney and it's something you feel led to do and you're a suitable match, living donation in which both donor and recipient remain alive after the procedure is completely moral and ethical. I mean, it's an extraordinary vocation. Nobody is called upon to risk their life for another. But if you feel led to do that, I think that's a wonderful thing. You know, I think that we would by now have much more ethical solutions if the public had been informed about all the problems going on with brain death, circulatory death, NRP. Also, we would have much better care for people with neurological injuries. We have been writing off all the hard cases and using them as organ donors rather than finding innovative ways of helping people. You know, the other thing I always want to say toward, you know, the end of my discussion is I want to offer a message of mercy to people who have been involved in this practice, you know, doctors, nurses. There's no way doctors and nurses can personally investigate everything they are taught. The knowledge they're responsible for is just too vast. So again, most doctors and nurses simply, like I did, we accept it on authority. Our authorities tell us it's true and we believe it. And, you know, of course, you know, arguments based on authority or the majority are logical fallacies, but we have so much information that we are sort of forced to accept a lot, sort of on the basis of our authorities. People who have given a family member to become an organ donor, it's not your fault that you were deceived. I mean, you made the best decision you could with the information you had available at the time and the goodness of your heart. It is not your fault that you weren't told these things. And people, you know, who have received an organ too, I mean, you were not told the origin of that organ. You were given not all the facts that you might have wanted to have to make the decision that you did, but we're glad you're here. I'm not at all saying that people who have received an organ did something wrong, but I do think it's wrong that people are not being given fully informed consent about these things when they enter the process. And I think that needs to change.
That leads to my next question, which is, can this process be done in an ethical way for organs beyond a kidney, for a heart or things like that? Can it be done ethically?
You know, you can actually living donate any organ, almost every organ except the heart, right? You can't give your heart to someone else. But the good news is a totally implantable artificial heart is now in clinical trials. And I think that would be a wonderful way to go. I mean, you wouldn't have to be in all the anti-rejection drugs and have risks of infection. And I think it would ultimately give people greater success over time. I was fascinated to learn recently, you can do living lung transplants. What they do is they take a low of the lung from each of two donors and put those two lobes from two donors into the recipient. You can give lengths of intestine from multiple donors. You can give a lobe of a liver. You can give a lobe of a pancreas. I mean, there are things that can be done and to do this ethically. And I think those things should be pushed and highlighted in that kind of research further.
What is your take on efforts to use pig hearts? Recently, I think that actually happened.
Yeah, I just wrote an op-ed about that for LifeSite News. You know, I think what's going on, the way they're doing it right now, is a horrible impingement of human rights. So what they did in China recently is they took a brain-dead man, right? And they found that he was so stable, he was a great host to try to see how an animal organ would work. Now, they took pig lung and they had genetically modified it by inserting certain human genes and removing certain pig genes. I think that's a bit problematic, making sort of human pig chimeras or hybrids is ethically questionable practice. But this so-called brain dead man, he was hemodynamically stable for the 9 days that the lung from the pig was put in him. He started making antibodies and started rejecting the pig organ. Now, the Orwellian doublespeak here is simply stunning. How can a dead person be kept alive? How can a dead person be hemodynamically stable to support an animal organ? How can a dead person reject that organ and start making antibodies? Well, you know, in point of fact, the man was not dead, right? This is an egregious breach of human rights. And it's not just happening in China. A few years ago, doctors in America also implanted genetically modified pig kidneys into two American men who were declared brain dead. And these men were given top flight ICU care. They were so stable, these so-called dead men, that these organs went over a month before they decided to terminate the experiment, sacrifice the patient, and take him to the lab for pathological study. So this is very ethically questionable. And again, you have to have a lot of cognitive dissonance to go with the idea that these people are actually dead. There's a lot of ethical questions. The other things, just as far as the animal organs that you asked about, I have problems with making human pig hybrids. I think that's ethically questionable. The first American patient to receive a genetically modified pig heart actually died of a pig virus that hitched a ride on that heart. So it is a concern that we could be introducing animal diseases into, you know, at least into the immunosuppressed recipient of the organ, possibly into the general population. Is this a way, you know, that we're going to introduce more animal diseases into the human population? There's a lot of questions that really have to be answered and aren't being answered. I mean, scientists are just continuing merrily along trying these things.
Dr. Klesig, is there's individuals out there who, out of pure intentions, they want to be an organ donor. They want to help other people. And with what we've heard today, obviously, they're going to be reevaluating maybe the way that they go about doing that. What advice do you have for those individuals who want to give the gift of life, as we've all seen at the DMV, but are really concerned about what we've just heard?
You know, the good thing is living donation, as I've mentioned, is a wonderful thing to do. And then we have not yet talked about tissue donation. Now, organs, things like heart, lungs, liver, and kidneys, are very dependent on a continuous supply of oxygen through the circulation. And as soon as that stops, the organs very quickly begin to decompose and become unsuitable for transplant. So in point of fact, for organs, you cannot take an organ from a dead person. Tissues, however, now when a doctor says tissues, we're not meaning puffs and Kleenex, right? We're talking about things like skin, bone, corneas, heart valves, this sort of thing. Tissues are much more resilient to an absence of circulation and can be removed from a person whose spirit has departed, who is biologically all dead. So you can be a tissue donor once you are biologically gone. There are some caveats with that. I would not recommend that you be a registered donor even for tissue. And here's why. A reporter in California recently wrote an article in the LA Times showing that some people's death investigations had been upended because organ procurement teams were able to have access to the body before a coroner's autopsy. So there were people like the family of John Flath. He was a young man in Army ROTC who just collapsed during a workout. He was a registered organ and tissue donor because he died outside of the hospital. He was not able to do organ donation, but organ procurement took his body and they took skin, bone, heart valves before the coroner could see why John had died, leaving his family without closure or answers because his heart was basically so destroyed from that tissue removal that the coroner could no longer tell his family why John had passed away. The other one that the reporter in California came up with was Christy Rettenman, the daughter of former Major League Baseball player and coach Merv Rettenman. She was in sort of an abusive relationship with her boyfriend, and there had been multiple police calls between the two of them. She came into the hospital and had obviously had some type of head injury. She had bruises on her body. But again, Christy was a registered donor, and so the organ procurement took her body before the coroner's autopsy, leaving the coroner with such a scanty corpse, I guess, the skin, the bones, things had been removed, that he could no longer say with certainty whether her death was a homicide. And so justice was never served for the Rettenmans. I mean, the man got away scot-free. So again, whereas it's all right to take tissues after biological death, I would never do this as a registered donor. Simply tell your family, your healthcare surrogate, put it in your end-of-life documents, that once all their questions are answered, they know that your death was not a result of a crime, your family can release your corpse to become a tissue donor if you would like to do this. That is just fine.
Where else can we find more information about organ donation?
You know, what I always urge people to do, you know, none of us like to think about death. We'd rather put it off. You know, how many of us have made out a will? We don't want to think about these things. But the problem with that is then you get blindsided, right? And if you're sitting in a hospital, you know, at the bedside of a loved one on a ventilator, you haven't slept, you haven't eaten, you're not in a position to make, you know, really great choices at that point. Your emotions are going to be raw. So even if it's uncomfortable, uncomfortable, I do recommend people look at this information now. I've written a couple of books. The first I wrote with my co-author, Christopher Bogosh, RN, and that's called Harvesting Organs and Cherishing Life. That's written for lay people. It's very easy to understand. We give some of these examples I talked about today. My second book is semi-technical. It's very good if you want, you know, chapter and verse. It's fully referenced if you're a doctor or a nurse or want to give it to your doctor or nurse. It's called The Brain Death Fallacy. Take a look at some of the information and share it and talk about it and think about it and be ready. You know, when the worst day of your life happens, you don't want to be unprepared.
Well, Dr. Klesig, for those listeners who are registered organ donors and want to reverse that decision after hearing everything you have to say, how do they do that?
On our website, if you scroll down the homepage, you know, there is a button that says, how do I get off the donor list? And we go through how that process can happen. The other thing on that is sort of important for people to know is that the Uniform Anatomical Gift Act was revised in 2006, such that now you really need to have a specific refusal to donate. Because if you come into the hospital and you're incapacitated and your family can't be found, the hospital administrator is given the power to donate your body on your behalf, unless there's a specific refusal to donate. And this becomes important. There's a case being sued right now in New York. A grandmother, Miriam Hoyas de Baldrick, had a bit of dementia. She wandered away from her home and was struck by a subway. She was taken to the hospital. And even though her family said she had some information in her pocket to tell people who she was, and they had filed a, you know, missing vulnerable adult report, the hospital couldn't find anybody. And because Miriam didn't have a specific refusal to donate, they took her organs. And now the family is suing about this. So the other thing that we have is we have links to our sister organization, the Healthcare Advocacy and Leadership Organization, or HALO Group. And they have an excellent end-of-life document. Plus, they have this handy I refuse to donate wallet card that you can keep with you in your wallet, and on the back you can sign and have it witnessed just to show people that I am a refusing to be an organ donor in case what happened to Grandma Miriam would happen to you. That way you are protected that way as well.
But it's not good enough just to take that designation off your driver's license, is it?
Not if you're unable to have your wishes explained and they can't find your next of kin. No, it's not. You need, according to the Uniform Anatomical Gift Act, you now need a specific refusal. And I would even put that in your electronic medical record when you see your clinician next time. Just ask that they add that you refuse to be an organ donor. It would be good to have it there as well.
Thank you so much, Dr. Klesig, for joining us and sharing this wealth of information.
Thank you so much.
You know, Victor, I'm sure our listeners are also somewhat squeamish about the idea of putting a pig heart into a human being. I don't think that's what God intended when he created the creatures of the earth and his crown achievement in creation, human beings.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right, Brad. I think there's a lot of people who rightfully so would be concerned about that and are also deeply concerned about the information that we've shared with them today and the truth of organ donation and how they're actually doing this. You know, informed consent is so very important. But I also want to point out the fact that for those who do want to give the gift of life selflessly, they want to donate, they can donate in an ethical way without their rights being violated. Dr. Klesig spoke with us about tissue donations and different ways that individuals can give live donations so that they don't have their right to life violated while just trying to do something good and honorable.
Yeah, considering the information that we've shared these past 2 weeks, many of you may be having second thoughts, and I hope you do, whether or not you want to be a donor. Now, it's not good enough to simply take that insignia off your driver's license. What you need to do is go into your individual state to a specific website and fill out the proper form to be taken off. Otherwise, they will be harvesting your organs, perhaps without your permission. And to help you with that, we have links to every state website where you can remove your name from being an organ donor. But Victor, it's been an absolute honor and privilege to share crucial developing stories with our listeners every week and in-depth ways in which we can get that information across. So you, the listener, I hope and pray that you will take what we have given you over the last couple of years and share that with other individuals, because then you can magnify our voice in ways that will make a difference and save lives. I'm pleased that we're ending this my role in this program every week with such a compelling program. This is an issue I've been concerned about for a long time. Since we did our initial research on this 10 years ago through a TV production.
Brad, the pro-life movement has really been a tremendous journey for you. And this is a bit of a sentimental episode, since this will be the last time that you'll be hosting Straight Talk on Life Issues. I know I will certainly miss you. Our listeners will certainly miss you as you move on to retirement. 50 years is an inspiration to myself and so many others, the dedicated service to the babies. And it's one of those things, Brad, I just have to imagine when you walk through those pearly gates, that is a well done, my good and faithful servant that's coming.
Well, I'm looking forward to being surrounded by the babies that we work to save, that's for sure.
So share with us just one story that's impacted you maybe the most throughout your time in the pro-life movement.
Well, the one that I would say most impactful was when I received a handwritten letter from a man whose younger brother had died by suicide after his girlfriend had two abortions. And his mom found him hanging from the rafter in her garage. A suicide note said he couldn't live with the anguish and pain of losing his children to abortion. Now, God used this letter to place a burden and passion on my heart for grieving fathers everywhere. And I became a founding member of the Men in Abortion Network and have lectured on this throughout the United States and around the world, actually. And the symptoms are always the same, no matter what the country is. We just can't let men, we can't let fathers be forgotten victims of abortion. They're not alone, and there's hope and there's healing.
Absolutely. And with that passion that you have, I mean, you're retiring as president of Life Issues Institute, but you're not going to be able to step away from the pro-life movement. Share with us some of your future plans for pro-life advocacy.
Well, one thing I'm working on is to be a volunteer snuggler. And this is somebody who holds babies in the NICU of hospitals. So for me, getting lap time with a baby always makes it a good day. And of course, I'll have the honorary title of President Emeritus of Life Issues Institute, and I'll continue my volunteer capacity as President of the International Right to Life Federation. That'll probably mean international trips of one or two a year. And I will speak on men and abortion when asked, and probably do writing.
What would be some advice that you have for the next generation of pro-life advocates?
Well, first of all, I'd encourage you kids to know the history of the movement so you can better build on its future. And bring your enthusiasm, your knowledge, your technology, your boldness to the table, and don't let anyone tell you you don't have a voice. But you know, with a voice comes great responsibility. So make sure that what you do, because the stakes are so high, that you help to protect the babies and not hinder the collective efforts of everyone. You know, you don't have the luxury of being sloppy or lazy, because lives are at stake.
Absolutely. And what would be one last piece of information that you would like to share with our listener?
Well, over the last 50 years, I probably served in every capacity in the pro-life movement that's out there. But I have to say, it's been a complete honor and privilege to serve to protect babies from abortion and to protect the mothers and fathers from the anguish that often follows it. And I think when I look back on my life, I'll rest secure in the knowledge that I used my gifts to the best of my ability to honor God, not myself, and to defend the babies.
Well, like I said, Brad has been an inspiration for me and so many other people. 50 years of dedicated service to the babies is just an incredible accomplishment. I want to encourage you, the listener, to visit our website, lifeissues.org. And there you'll be able to send a message of appreciation to Brad. Celebrate his 50 years of doing this and encourage him as he moves on to a new chapter in his life. That's available again at lifeissues.org to send him a message of appreciation.
While you're at our website, lifeissues.org, I also want to encourage you to make use of the free resources and information we have there regarding organ donation, specifically what you need to know and do to take your name off the organ donor registry. Again, that's available at lifeissues.org. Be sure to tune in next week for another Straight Talk on Life Issues.